He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
The situation for their own purposes, and they need to be treated as criminals. Criminals and thugs who tore up the place.
You hear that? The president just said thugs. So did the mayor. And here's the question. And this is one I want you to get involved in. Answer it for me. Is thug a code word for black people behaving badly? Has it become a loaded racist expression like the N-word? Or at least has it become a racial pejorative, a kind of code word that should be banned from polite society? Hi, everybody. It's Geraldo along with Noam Layden, 7 minutes after 10 o'clock. You know, as someone, and you've heard me on this one, sensitive to the use of words like aliens. I hate that word, aliens, to describe Hispanic immigrants, or mafia, or mobster, to describe members of organized crime or criminal enterprises, including but not limited to the traditional Sicilian or Italian organized criminal gangs. I have to tell you, I was pleasantly surprised when America's first black president described the rioters in Baltimore as thugs. Similarly, I thought that the black mayor, Stephanie Rawlins Blake, for all the things she did wrong in the beginning of the troubles in Baltimore, telling the cops to stand down and so forth, I thought that she was also brave to use the term thug or thugs accurately to describe the greedy, destructive looters who ravaged and robbed that innocent neighborhood, trashing homes, staggering that neighborhood, setting it back for decades. Now, both the president and the mayor spoke in the passion of the moment. The mayor, embattled because of her inept handling, at least of the early stages of the troubles in Baltimore, later retreated from her use of the word thug. She apologized for it about 10 times a day since. The president, though, to his credit, has not retreated. And you had Josh Earnest, the White House press secretary, just yesterday defending Mr. Obama's description of the rioters, the looters, as thugs. Earnest saying yesterday, the actions, I'll quote here, the actions of a small minority that were nothing short of criminal actions, and whether it's arson or, you know, the looting of a liquor store, those were thuggish acts. Thuggish acts. 866 Geraldo, nobody can deny, nobody listening can deny that burning buildings and looting liquor stores are thuggish acts. Therefore, I think thug is exactly the appropriate way to describe the people who raped West Baltimore. They raped West Baltimore in the wake of the funeral of the 25-year-old guy, Freddie Gray, who died in police custody. I mean, maybe those cops were behaving thuggishly also. Maybe they should be called out on it. I mean, the cops in the Rodney King case certainly looked like they were behaving thuggishly, didn't they? When they whacked and whacked and whacked. Similarly, and this is the important distinction here, I thought that those drunken University of Florida ZBT frat boys, the ones who harassed and insulted the disabled veterans at that party around Pensacola, I thought those frat boys, those white ZBT frat boys, were also thugs. I said so at the time. Monday in New York, yesterday, 25-year-old hero cop, Brian Moore, died after being shot in the face by a dirtbag, predatory, violent ex-con, Demetrius Blackwell by name. So is it okay to call Blackwell a thug if he was white? But not okay to call Blackwell a thug because he's black? I mean, clearly shooting an innocent cop in the face at point-blank range, that's a thuggish act, right? Last Thursday night in Baltimore, I chased an anarchist agitator who was attempting to interfere with my broadcast. Get out of here, you punk! I shouted. He retreated into the cover of darkness. You're a thug, I said. You're a white thug. Because he was a white guy. I wanted to be clear. So I just want you to know I'm not giving up on the word. But I do promise you this. If it accurately describes a predator's conduct, a perpetrator's conduct, that I will apply the word thug to all dirtbags, regardless of their race, color, creed, or religion. It's the least I can do. Yes, Bill. Thanks for going. 866 Geraldo. First call of the day. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just want to say the thug word, thug is not a code word for any other word. It is describing what a mobster, a gangster, anybody that commits a crime is. And these guys go around and all these rap artists go around calling themselves gangsters. A gangster is a thug. So they're not going to hijack that word from me. I know they're not going to hijack it from you. And it's about time that everybody in this country stood up and got out there and started using it for, and telling it like it is. And you know what? The police department, they need to get some rallies going where a bunch of us people could get out there with our signs in support of them, because I'm so sick and tired of hearing cops being killed by thugs.
All right, Bill, thank you. And there is a good point there. So here you have this poor cop, Ryan Moore, 25 years old, same age as Freddie Gray. Same age. How ironic. So in Freddie Gray's death, you had, you know, Elijah Cummings, God bless him, and so many other well-intended people saying that this is now the civil rights cause of our time. Police brutality. But what is it when a hero New York City cop gets shot in the face? Sitting behind the wheel of his patrol car or his plainclothes vehicle. And he questions the ex-con, Demetrius Blackwell, about the suspected weapon. The perp whips out the handgun, and he shoots the cop at point-blank range in the face. So he clings to life for a couple of days before he finally dies. Parents have the painful job of giving permission for the plug to be pulled. As far as I know, there are no civil rights marches planned to order the life, or to honor the life of this 25-year-old Officer Brian Moore. I mean, have you heard of any? The outrage? What if it was the other way around? What if the kid who had done everything right in his life, the cop, Brian Moore, had shot and killed the ex-con, scumbag, career criminal Demetrius Blackwell in the face on Saturday. And Blackwell's family had to pull the plug yesterday. Can you imagine what the different reaction would have been? The death of Demetrius Blackwell would have been a cause célèbre. They would have T-shirts. Every civil rights activist that you know, every organized Wall Street group that you know, every student group that you know, would have been out there shouting, "Remember Demetrius Blackwell, the poor man shot in the face by this cop." But it didn't happen that way. It happened that Demetrius Blackwell, a career criminal, a violent, predatory career criminal, shot and killed this officer. So Demetrius Blackwell, who happened to be black, and Officer Brian Moore, who happened to be white, had this fatal encounter, and the cop shot in the face, point-blank range, and now he's dead. 25 years old, just like Freddie Gray. So don't cops' lives matter, too?
Where's the outrage? Where's the demonstration? Demetrius Blackwell was a thug. He is a thug. And now justice will crush him. But it's too late for Brian Moore. And the hypocrisy that this incident lays bare makes me sick. Makes me sick. Police brutality is the civil rights cause of our time. 8 dead in Baltimore in the last week and a half. Mostly young men of color killing themselves, each other. The only death we care about is Freddie Gray's because he was killed by a cop. 6 cops charged, 3 of them black. Black police commissioner, black mayor. This is a deep problem we have with urban America. Freddie Gray didn't deserve to die in police custody. By no means. And his civil rights will be protected in death by the Justice Department of the United States. I see the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, is going to Baltimore today. But I submit to you that the civil rights issue of this time should be the bootstrap operation that's necessary to rid these neighborhoods of the Demetrius Blackwells, to give them role models like Brian Moore. Officer Brian Moore came from the Massapequa area. Plainview, is it his high school?
Plainage High School.
Plainage.
Last night, 1,000 people showing up to
just
honor
spontaneously
his memory.
Hurry up.
Yeah, they announced it. You know, of course, they only took him off life support, the family did yesterday. And by last night, just a couple hours later, 1,000 people outside the football field to honor him, which is really an amazing sight to see.
And isn't it amazingly ironic that you have these? This is a tale of two 25-year-olds.
Yeah.
Just beginning life, really just beginning the, well, Freddie Gray's been around a while, arrested 9 times. You know, he's got his own problems. Brian Moore, his father's a cop. He became a cop out there trying to do his best. Shot in the face by Demetrius Blackwell. It's just, it's too much. Okay, what are you thinking about? Thug. Is thug a pejorative? Is it it's certainly a pejorative. Is it a racially charged pejorative? That's the real key. Is it like the N-word? Should it be banned? Does it accurately describe some of what we have seen, Baltimore and elsewhere? It certainly accurately describes Demetrius Blackwell, the violent, dirtbag, career criminal, ex-con thug who shot and killed the cop. We'll start with John in New York. What's up, John? What are you thinking?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. Yes, you know, I agree with you and your previous caller. A thug is a thug is a thug. And we should resist the efforts of the PC crowd nowadays to preempt our use of perfectly good words and appellations. It certainly was not racist to call the brown shirts in Germany in the 1930s thugs.
Right, right. I don't know what that noise was just then, but you're absolutely right. They were thugs. The thuggy, I guess thuggy comes from the Hindu culture in India with the professional assassins and robbers. They were thuggies.
Thugs.
That's where it comes from. I just like assassin comes from the Hashashin. Thanks, John. The Hashashin, they used to hash themselves crazy. That's where the word assassin came from. There's perfectly good routes. I mean, roots. Yusuf in Long Island. What's up, Yusuf?
Hey, how you doing, Geraldo?
Good, man.
I want to give you a stark difference in your analysis of people, I guess, coming together and marching and so on and so forth for the police and
right.
These, you know, murders and stuff on officers in comparison to Freddie Gray and others, is that majority of the time we know that the perpetrator is going to be caught and he will get charged to the maximum. However, how many times have we seen the police more or less get away with murder? You know, we look at Eric Garner, and you have people to this day, especially amongst the police, justify that. It wasn't a chokehold, it was this, it was that, playing a game of semantics while a man was murdered over some cigarettes.
So, you know, I don't disagree with you, Yusuf. I think that there is a stark difference between the track record, put it that way, of people who succumb to excessive police violence, what happens to the cops, as opposed to people who perpetrate violence against cops, what happens to them. They generally get arrested or killed in the action. That's absolutely true. But what I'm talking about, and I appreciate your call, what I'm talking about is when you have an atmosphere like the atmosphere that we had before the Ramos Liu killings in New York when those two cops were assassinated. But I'm strong. President Obama in the city yesterday, snarling traffic, caught me in one jam, caught Erica and Sol in another. Both of us, though, managed a glimpse of the president. Could see him waving through the tinted glass of his bulletproof limousine and his very impressive motorcades. I wonder if he actually saw me. Sol swears he looked her in the eye.
Oh, yeah? That's cool.
Before he snarled up Manhattan, he had a fundraiser in town also. He went to the Bronx and he did something pretty great there, I think. He's launching this My Brother's Keeper Alliance, which the president says now he's committed to the future of urban youth. Mazel tov and about time, but he spent some time yesterday, as I say, in the Bronx with the president of the borough of the Bronx. Reuben Diaz Jr. joins us, my favorite borough president. How you doing, Mr. President? Tell me, was it a thrill to have the president there?
Good morning. Yes, it was exciting. I was thrilled to welcome President Obama to the Bronx yesterday. You know, any day whenever you get the president of the United States come and spend some time in the Bronx, and especially coming to my alma mater, Lehman College, is always a good day. It was a historic day for us. And even more importantly was the reason why he came. As you said, he came to launch the My Brother's Keeper Alliance program. He spoke to many of the youth in our borough in Lehman College. And it was just a great conversation as to how is it that we as a nation proceed and making sure that we provide for a better future. You know, Geraldo, when you look at everything that's happening around the country, around police-community relations, the unemployment rate, and other of our, you know, social and economic woes, a lot has to do with the fact that many of our urban young Latino and black men don't have that type of mentorship. And for me, you know, I know firsthand what it's like to be young, to be a teenage dad, to have the mentorship and have mentors who've mentored me, and also paying it forward. So it was just an excellent day in our borough yesterday. And we were excited to have the president here.
Let me, I want to get back to the specifics on that. Reuben Diaz Jr., the Bronx Borough president, is my guest. You know, spending last week in Baltimore, and then I have so much experience in New York, the Bronx, and elsewhere, there's a big difference between young men of color in in and around New York and other cities, and places like Baltimore or East Cleveland or downtown Detroit. Those communities, it seems to me, Mr. President, the prevailing mood 99% of the time is apathy. There's this kind of this is my lot in life, and you know, this is the way it's going to be, and you never get out of it, you never change it, you do the best you can, get your hustle on, do whatever you can to get by. And then apathy 1% of the time turns to rage, as it did in 1968 in Baltimore and as it did last week in Baltimore. What's the difference? Why is the inner city young person in New York, for all of our problems, they seem to have a different cut to their jib. They seem more, even if, you know, sometimes their energy is misdirected, at least they have energy.
Right. So you got to understand one thing, that even about in our darkest moments, back in the 70s and the 80s, you still had this sort of that energy that you speak of. You know, we call it like the inner city swag. This is the way that when you look at a global phenomenon, say like hip-hop music, which was started out of, you know, sort of that, you know, reporting all of the decay, the urban decay that was going on at the time. But, you know, it was not so long ago also, Geraldo, that many of the young men in the Bronx, many of them that I grew up with in the 80s and the 90s, they also felt the same way. And I think the difference is a number of things. New York City is big, and we can get, you know, to different parts of the city relatively easy with our public transportation system. But we've also seen an influx of elected, you know, a large amount of elected officials that come from that urban plight, such as myself, for instance, who understand the community, who understand the struggle. Like I said earlier, I was a father at 19 years of age. A lot of people don't understand that. My son, my oldest son is 22, and my youngest is 20, and the oldest one graduated from Boston College, and the youngest graduated from just finishing his second year at Temple University. And that's because growing up, we had that mentorship. Growing up, we had that, you know, we had individuals that took the time out, such as.
So tell me specifically what this program is going to do for those kids.
So you have individuals from the private and public sector. And yesterday we had individuals such as Shaquille O'Neal and Alonzo Mourning and John Legend. And these are folks that are going to give the resources, give of their time, go to areas, have the conversation like it was had yesterday with the Bronx youth, getting some of the ideas, making sure that we have recreational activities, making sure that we have job training, making sure that we open up the doors and that we marry those individuals who are educating themselves, those individuals who have the skills that we identify with the skills in the workplace with corporate America. And so this way, they know that as they struggle, they know that as they're educating themselves, there's actually a light at the end of the tunnel.
But you know my problem with these programs that I've seen come and go over the years, my long years from when I was a legal services attorney back in the day? These programs come, they're funded for a couple of years, they get some other priority 2 years later. The rec center closes or they move on, the funding dries up. It's so, you know, it seems so temporary. It's always the big announcement, always the idealism, we're going to fix this. And then there's the movement away, and then they're on to the next cause.
So the difference of yesterday from the past is that we actually had the president of the United States commit himself, not only for the remainder of his presidency, but he said that this is something that he's going to tackle for the rest of his life. And those are powerful words. And he sort of challenged America in his speech. And he said, this is about whether or not we love these kids and whether or not we can show them that love. And a lot of times you can do it with words, but more often times than not, the fact that our youth are so hip these days, they also want to see action.
For sure.
And now when you look at some of the things that perhaps are swept under the rug, like the police community relations, like the fact that in many areas 50% of black and Latino young men are unemployed. Those are now through social media and media all over the world, that's now coming to light. So corporate America is also understanding that if we help and if we concentrate on this population, instead of having them go to prison, instead of having, you know, the government pay for things that we don't necessarily want to spend money on, they could be the potential part of the solution in our local and national economy if we
I hope so.
These young men are trained and are prepared to go to the workforce. So I think that you know what we saw yesterday was a group of young men that were totally the president was totally impressed by. And we're optimistic, and all we could do now is hold the president's word to it. All we could do now is work with him, work with corporate America, work with the celebrities and the athletes that were there, and hopefully change in reality.
Absolutely. Institutionalize and give it some memory that it lasts and, you know, span some of these years, get some of these kids onto the straight and narrow. I appreciate you coming on. Thanks, Borough President Ruben Diaz, Jr.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, buddy.
Pleasure.
You know, I adopted a class from Rafael Cordero Junior High School in eighth grade. Eighth grade, I said, you finish high school, I will put you through college. The whole class. I think it was 28 of them. This is eighth grade. So now what I realized was the challenge wasn't getting them into college. The challenge was getting them through eighth grade and ninth grade and 10th grade with everything going on in their lives. This is East Harlem. And this is long enough ago, so East Harlem wasn't like now. It wasn't, you know, now the lower Spanish Harlem and the Upper East Side, you can't even tell anymore. 96th Street doesn't divide the two anymore. But it was such a challenge. And then this one was had problems with the father. And this one, you know, there were so many things going on that mentorship alone wasn't enough. It was a very exhausting time. And then at the end of it, you know, I got out of the group, I got one doctor.
That's good.
I got a couple that are ranking NCOs in the military, about three or four college graduates, and the rest went on, you know, some trades people, some dropped out. I slightly beat the odds on if I had not intervened at all.
Wait, so how many of the 28 actually graduated high school?
I was trying to remember the exact number, but it was more than half, but not like dramatically more. It was rough.
Program's right. You got to intervene when they're in junior high school.
You have to, at junior high, eighth grade is the last. I mean, if you don't catch them by eighth grade, I think that one of the reasons, I mean, I'm not crazy about Mayor de Blasio, but the reason I think this pre-K thing makes sense is the sooner you start, the better. The sooner you start, the better. Like in Baltimore, this is an example. In Baltimore, when schools were closed, that the day or two schools were closed because of the violence, Monday and Tuesday, maybe even 3 days schools were closed, there was some of those youngsters that weren't going to eat because the meal that they got in school, that was the main meal they were going to get. I just thought, my God, this is so screwed up. This is so sad here. So I think that when you look at the Clinton Foundation, the global initiative, the Clinton Foundation, they are the climate change and, you know, sub-Saharan Africa and here and there and the other. I would love an Obama Foundation that concentrated on this population that I think he has studiously avoided during the 7 years of his presidency so far. The fact that he did this in the Bronx and he did it earlier in Chicago, I applaud that. I embrace that. I encourage that. That could be his legacy. Helping us to find a way to reclaim this lost population. Elijah Cummings says that police brutality is the civil rights issue of our era. Why is it that so many young black men are being jacked up in encounters with cops? It's because they're having encounters with cops. They're not, the vast majority of times, they're not gratuitously running into cops who are aggressively seeking to harass them. They're running into cops because they're sticking up a store, or they're robbing a tire, or they're, you know, they're doing on the corner doing something. It's, we have to give them something else to do so they don't have these frictional run-ins with the law. Give them context. Give them structure. Give them hope. Harness ambition.
I just have 30 seconds before the news break. But when we come back, I want to continue the discussion. And if you're holding on, please be patient. We'll get to 866-ERELDO. After the break, is thug a code word for black people behaving badly? Has it become a loaded racist expression like the N-word? Or is it at least a racial pejorative? Or is that too politically correct? Is a thug if they are people who behave as criminal dirtbag predators? Aren't those thuggish acts? We'll debate after this. Feliz Cinco de Mayo.
I'm looking at Pitbull because I don't think he's Mexican. I think he's Cuban, isn't he?
Let's see. Pitbull, oh, he's from Miami.
Let's see. He's born in the United States. Pitbull.
34 years old. So Cinco de Mayo, it's not even Mexican Independence Day. It celebrates the victory of the Mexican forces over the French.
So it was an important battle.
Is Donald Trump on the line? Oh, Donald Trump's calling. Oh, delightful. He and I spoke briefly, called in Baltimore. I was very proud to get a call from the Donald after one of the incidents with the rioters there. He was kind enough to give me a call and some affirmation. So we'll talk to him. He made a statement about Pamela Geller that I want you all to hear.
Donald, are you there?
I am.
Mr. Trump joins us. How you doing?
Aloha. I was so proud of you. I actually called you. I don't know if you have said this yet, but I called you to say you are a brave person. And I watched other people on other networks trying to imitate Geraldo, my Geraldo. And guess what? They were out of there very quickly. Those cameras went off and those guys went running. You were right in their face.
Well,
people respect it.
I learned a lot at your knee there on Sylvia Prentice. A good boss, buddy. And I was really proud to get the call. And you know, my whole thing is that you can have your demonstration, your protest, but when you start messing around with other people, you bust up their store, you touch my camera. That goes above and beyond.
And some of those people that were in your face, they were nothing but trouble. They weren't looking for anything other than trouble.
They were agitators, anarchists, absolutely.
Yeah. And you were willing to say it, and nobody else is willing to say it. You know, they talk about, like, this is legit stuff. These were bad. Some of these people were really bad people that were in your face. And I love the way you just you put that mug out there. I was waiting, actually, for you to get hit, but unfortunately that did not happen, sadly. Sadly for the viewing public.
I'm like you. You hit me, I hit you back.
That's right. Sadly. You would have hit back. You would have gone down fighting.
I definitely would have.
There's no doubt about that.
We have common ground on that and many things, but you said something about Pamela Geller, the anti-Muslim extremist activist who had the ads that I considered hateful that were banned by the MTA. Finally, the MTA had to take down all political ads because it's free speech, however obnoxious. And she had this this event in Garland, Texas, that I think had exactly the effect that Pamela Geller intended. I think that she and the jihadist extremists both got their wish. She provoked violence, and they provided it. They were killed. They went to their Valhalla and their virgins in the sky after getting shot and killed by cops. But you said something about Pam Geller taunting Muslims that I thought that audience needed to hear.
Oh, I think she's disgraceful. And I watched her on television. I watched her even on your Fox. And I think she's disgraceful. She's doing it. Obviously, she's gaining something out of it. I haven't seen exactly what. And she's very lucky that this one cop did a great job with a handgun against some very powerful weapons, because if they would have gotten into that auditorium, many people would have been killed. Many, many people would have been killed. So I think she is absolutely a disgrace. I think she's taunting. I think she's benefiting herself. I think she loves the publicity. And, you know, it was sort of interesting. I was going to say very strongly, I was going to say, let her do it against somebody else. Okay, so she hits the Muslims, right? And I'm a big, big believer in free speech. I mean, nobody bigger believer than me. But you also have to be smart about it. So let her hit some other group. Let her hit Jesus. Let her hit the African Americans. Let her go and hit let's see how long she lasts when she does that. Let's see if she wants to do that. She wants to show and provoke. She wants to provoke people, so let her do that. Let her provoke through Jesus. Let her provoke through the African Americans. She won't do that because that wouldn't be popular to do. So I think she's a troublemaker. She's an agitator. And she is doing something and obviously benefiting. And she got very lucky. She ought to send prayer someplace, because had that very smart and very brave and very talented policeman not been there with a handgun to knock these guys out with their AK-47s or whatever they had, that whole room would have been killed, and killed quickly.
So when you hear someone defending her right of free speech, your response, Donald Trump?
Well, my response is very simple. I'm a bigger believer in free speech than she is. But why are you provoking? Doesn't this country have enough problems? You know, it's called smart speech also. Doesn't our country have enough problems, Geraldo, with everything that's going on in the world? The whole world is against us right now. And we have her in the middle of Texas. And by the way, getting armed guards all over the place. So she knows what's going to happen. I mean, she knows this is going to happen. So let's see how brave she is if she did it with Jesus, if she did it against African Americans, if she threw out the N-word. Let her throw out the N-word and do stuff in that. Let's see how brave she is. She wouldn't last for very long. So she can do all she wants and she can provoke, but I think she's just a self-centered provocateur. And frankly, I cannot believe that people even defend her, because it's not smart, it's not good, and our country has enough problems. And I didn't know you felt that way.
I feel 100%. I'm totally in your corner on this one. I feel exactly the same way.
And, you know, in watching her, she's one of the few people, she has a far worse New York accent than I do. So it's even that. But I think she's a disgrace, and I think she's not good, and I don't know why people come to her defense. And I like freedom of speech, and I'm a bigger believer than she is in freedom of speech. And you probably are, too. You are.
I am, and I stay with you 100% on that, and tell us when you're going to announce.
Okay, well, I'll be talking to you very soon. I'll be letting you know, okay? You know I'll be talking to you about it.
One and only Donald Trump. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm telling you, she is such... She's a thug. Pamela Geller is a thug. She's a thug who is defiling the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, a thug. And people to back her, to back that hideous, you know, taunting. Just imagine, just put any other group in there but Muslims. Same thing. I'm just defending free speech. Okay, let's have the cartoons for the of the Jews now. Now let's have, all right, now Jesus, let's have you, go ahead, do that. It's just so outrageous how people fell for her BS. I would ban her from Fox News. I would ban her. Every time I see her, she just...
Is she a regular on Fox News?
Not a regular. She's an irregular. But she was everywhere, not just Fox. I mean, I saw her on MSNBC. I saw her on CNN. I saw her with Allison Camerota on the CNN Morning Show.
We had her here once. Remember that? A long time ago.
Did she come here?
I can't remember if she came here, but I remember you got into a fight with her.
Because she was doing those ads.
And I think at the time you said, I'll never have you on again.
Yeah.
I think you told her that.
And I never will.
Yeah.
I never will. Absolutely appalling. She is Pamela Geller is a thug. Hi, Patrice. Thanks for calling from Hillside.
Hello?
Hi, Patrice. You're on.
Oh, hi, Geraldo. I was speaking to your the all-screener, and I just have an issue with, I love you, by the way.
Thank you.
Nothing against you at all. Wait, let me take you off speaker so I can love you more.
Okay.
So I don't sound weird.
Yeah, now you can love me more.
Okay, I took off speaker. Okay, my issue with a lot of the comments from, and I know you're very middle, you're not too far left or too far right, but I listen to talk radio constantly. I listen all the time. And I hear this tone that all of the cops are profiling thugs. I believe that thugs exist. I'm a black person that knows. I live in Hillside. I go to Newark. My clients are in Newark. And I go by through the hood, the outer boroughs of Newark. They're only developing in the Central Ward, which is the downtown area.
Right.
Outside of that, they're not developing anything. It's drugs. It's dilapidation. It's lack of poor schools. All of those things. But what my point was to your call screener is that it's a lot of kids that these cops are stopping that are not thugs, that come from two-parent households, which my boys are from. I have a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old. They're big boys. They're almost 6 feet tall. My oldest one is already over 6 feet. And they get profiled. My son was profiled on my own street by Hillside Police, and we've owned our house for 6 years.
Oh, that's too bad. That's
he had
too
a hoodie on, though. But it was in the winter.
Yeah. Well, you have to tell them. You know, I had my run-ins with my sons about their hoodies also. And I think that hoodies are fine when it's raining or the wind is blowing, but to use them as a, you know, to be cooler or too cool for school, I think that that's the problem.
No, my kids don't do that. They don't. When the day that I saw my son trying to sag, I reminded him that they don't wear belts in jail. And your pants sag down in jail. Do you want to look like a jailbird? And
he said no.
And he said no. And he started wearing a belt. And he totally got off that whole train.
That's good.
I explained to him where it comes from. And it's a lot. I have a lot of friends. I work with a lot of people. I know a lot of elected officials. I know a lot of folks. Their kids are the same as mine. They're not out here at 10 o'clock at night. They're in the house. When they say, do you know where your children are? that's not my kids, and that's not my friends' children, and that's not my family's friends' children. We have doctors and lawyers in our family. The tone that's being set in the media is that all these kids, we know that these kids exist, but they're not all our kids. They don't represent the entire black community, and I'm just getting tired of hearing the Sean Hannitys of the world, the Mark Levins of the world, only identifying the people out here doing crimes, and it's just us black folks.
Ah, yes. Man, Patrice, I've got to take a break, but I adore you and your call and your situation, and don't be a stranger, and thank you very much for calling me.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye. Patrice, thank you. Good luck with your family.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
A lot going on in our lives here in the big city in our country. The president initiating or spreading the word on this new program, My Brother's Keeper Alliance. I like the sound of it, but I want to see much more. It's got to be a massive commitment, mentoring these young men, providing some structure. But I think a Republican president, you know, I got nothing against Hillary. I tell you the truth, I have nothing against Hillary. And, I do have some severe misgivings about many in the Republican field, but there are some excellent people in the Republican field also, like Jeb Bush. But what I want is a new approach. What I want is a proactive, optimistic approach. I want a recognition that the inequality, the differential between someone living in the core inner city and someone in the outer lying areas, that their lives have so little in common, but their aspirations are the same. By the same token, I have been haunted by a call. We got two calls last week when I was in Baltimore. One was from a cop, talked about what a quote-unquote turd Freddie Gray was, you know, this long arrest record and the fact that he had all these run-ins with the cops previously, which I thought, was an unfortunate thing. But it stuck in my mind how these officers must see these people that they see over and over and over again committing this crime or that crime allegedly, or this run-in, that run-in. And then another caller spoke, a New Jersey taxpayer, owned property in New Jersey, and talked about how he pays the highest taxes in the state, and I forget the community, Short Hills or one of them. I forget what community it was precisely, but he drives to work past Camden and past Trenton, and he sees the inner city, and he knows how so many of the past mayors have been arrested for using, glomming that rehabilitation money and the rebuilding money, and how corruption and all the money they're throwing into those core inner cities is being squandered and wasted. I was haunted by both those calls. And then you get a call like this lady we just heard, whose sons are big strapping fellows, who are, sometimes they wear hoodies, sometimes they get questioned by the cops, sometimes they get profiled. You know, when you hear all these things, all of these callers kind of, I wish I could get them all together. Because we all want the same thing. And if the president could really lead an initiative, what I'm saying about the next president, if you have an optimistic, proactive approach, and first of all, the first job would be the recognizing that you have a situation. Now, how are you going to fix it? And recognizing that the old liberal democratic ways with entitlements have not worked. They've only made people poorer, families more dysfunctional. And you have 1.5 million young black men who are missing. I mean, Hillary's right about that. Missing. So you need programs like our idea in Baltimore, that sweat equity idea, to help people become owners. Will you teach them construction trades? Forgive the tax lien. Give some sweat equity. Will you pay some people to do the right thing, to have their kids go to school, have good attendance, get good grade? I think there's got to be pragmatic solutions to these problems in a proactive way, but it has to begin with the recognition that this is the issue of our time.
When I ran for student council at Hope Junior High School, so it seems perfectly fitting that it would be here that I announce that I am a candidate for President of the United States of America.
Mike Huckabee live announcing his candidacy. You know, the evangelicals are the religious right, still the biggest segment within the Republican Party. He won Iowa in 2008 and five other of the primaries before he ran out of money. That's it?
Thank you.
I think he was waiting for more for an applause line, was he?
Well, I'm glad you reacted that way. It would have been a very lonely day had you been quiet.
He's a great guy. I like him a lot. I like his wife, Janet. He was my... We were kind of like sweet mates at Fox for a long time. Weekend, he had the 8 o'clock weekend show, and I followed right behind him for years before Judge Denise came, and then when she came between us, just on the clock. But I still ran into him all the time. He's really a very, very nice guy.
So are you going to vote for him? Or?
You know, I'm not saying who I'm going to vote for, but I tend not to appreciate people whose social politics become their most important priority. In other words, it's not economic policy, it's not foreign policy, it's really personal policy. You know, gay marriage and, you know, it's personal conduct, marijuana reform, things like that. I'm so totally different from Mike. But I tell you this, he's a man of absolute impeccable character. He's intelligent. He is witty. He's pleasant. He's tolerant. I mean, at least in terms of hanging out with people like me. But he is, he's evangelical and he's a pastor. And a lot of that infects a lot of his decisions. But in Iowa, there are a lot of people that think the way he does. A lot of evangelicals in Iowa. A lot of evangelicals listen to talk radio. I think that... And that's right. Mike was here for a while.
Oh, I got to know him pretty well.
Yeah.
I had many conversations with him when he was doing his national show out of here. And I enjoyed every one of them. A lot of times I didn't agree with him, but he was a fun guy to talk to.
He is a fun guy. I wish him the best. He's a terrific guy. 41 minutes after 11 o'clock, you are listening to 77 WABC. What's on your mind? Paul in Queens. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Geraldo. I was listening to you guys talk about Pamela Gill, you and Donald, but let me ask you a question. Are you not going to bring her on because you can't talk to her or discuss with her, or are you going to be a bigot and not talk to her at all?
You know, I don't know if I could bring
because
up, for instance.
Oh,
hold on. Yeah, okay. Yes, the question. Let me answer.
Yeah.
I had the contentious, highly rated run-ins with the Nazis back in the day, the neo-Nazis, the Aryan Nazis, the skinhead Nazis, and they always raided. Every time I was on television, why? Because it was a lot like Baltimore in the sense that people waited to see whether there was going to be a physical altercation, an explosion. So I understand as a marketer, like it's great programming. But you have to know that, hold on, be patient. I didn't get to the answer yet, did I? Thank you very much. Thank you.
Got it.
I think that Pamela Geller is a hate monger. She is a hate monger, and there's nothing that she can say using the rhetoric that she has cleverly adopted of First Amendment, freedom of speech, and all that BS. She cares about freedom of speech like I care about, rollers in your hair. It's just she is a hate monger. She is an exploiter. She is a person who is trying to aggravate a situation to get attention for herself. I want to know who funds her. Who funds her? Do you know?
You know, I imagine, well, in Dallas, where they had that event,
Garland,
people were paying to get in, so there's money from that. And extremists on both sides, are probably, I would imagine, I don't know this for a fact, but I imagine they're padding her wallet because she's very pro-Israel, so I imagine she has the right wing.
She is bad for the Jews. I'll tell you that right now. Bad for the Jews. That's the worst thing I could tell about it. In Brooklyn, David's on the line. What's up, David?
Hey, how are you, Geraldo?
Oh, I'm not doing too badly. What's up?
Okay, I'm just going to tell you, usually you get my blood boiling because I disagree with you, but today I think I agree with you, but you still got my blood boiling. By the way, I agree with you, she's bad for the Jews because it's just going to incite these cuckoos.
Exactly.
Anyway, or these thugs, if I may use that
you
word.
You may use that word, too.
And now, let me just tell you about the word thug. If you look it up in the dictionary, I mean, it's acts of criminal act, violent act, hooligans, vandals. That's exactly what these guys in Baltimore did. They are thugs. It doesn't make a difference if they're black, white, pink, yellow, purple, or gray. No, you know, they are thugs.
Agreed.
And you're asking what the difference is, why the N-word. The N-word, if you, the actual meaning of the N-word means black. I guess I don't agree that it's a derogatory term, but that's the way it came about, and that's the way it's used. So let's say we can talk it. We can say the word. But the actual word means black. The actual word thug has nothing to do with black. It has to do with the definition that I mentioned earlier. As a sidebar, I don't understand why the black people between themselves use the word and nobody cares. They you know, when they bump up against each other.
I don't like that either. I don't like that either. That's part of why
I
believe that hip-hop culture has been destructive in some ways.
You know, I mean, soon I know the borough president used the word hip. Someone's going to say that that's a derogatory term for black people? Come on. Come on. Grow up. Go out. Get jobs. Get a life. Pull yourself together. Rebuild your cities. Rebuild your towns. Don't be looking how you could get away with things. And that's the bottom. That's the fact of the problem. Is that
okay, David, you and I are on the same page, buddy. Good. Laura, hi, sweetheart. How are you?
Hi, Geraldo. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
God,
nice to be home.
Geraldo, you know, we have to try to move away from this black and white. It's about white, right and wrong, Geraldo. This officer asked, what was he doing? He shot him down in cold blood, Geraldo. That is wrong. That is not a black and white issue. It's a wrong. Thug, I can't say over the air what I called him. The FCC will close me down, okay? I mean, it's just beyond. But, Geraldo, another thing, we can't mix apples and oranges, all right? I mean, for you to say that, you know, the activists or the civil rights leaders would be out there if it was vice versa, that's not true. God knows that is not true. The difference is that this slime ball, we don't have to worry about him. When there's misconduct with the police, if we don't protest or do it's swept under the rug. There's many cases right here in Harlem that I know of.
I understand that, so, and I don't necessarily disagree
with that,
Laura. I get it.
Apples and oranges.
I get it.
Just one more thing.
Okay.
He needs the death penalty. Have a good day.
Okay, thanks. I'm sorry about those sirens outside your window there. I wonder what that's about. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, it is very difficult to convict a cop of misconduct. Why is that? It's because the cops protect us. We know they protect us. If you're on a jury, you want the cop between you and the bad guy. They have a very difficult job. We give tremendous deference to the judgment of law enforcement in exigent circumstance. You know, like the guy with the 45, the brave traffic cop who shot down those two machine gun wielding people. What if he made a mistake? You know, you make mistakes in those kinds of situations. You know, we have to put yourself in their shoes. Cops deal with the worst people among us in the most dangerous situations possible. Sometimes they make mistakes. Now, that doesn't mean that there are no bad cops. That doesn't mean that there are no sadistic cops. There are. There are. I mean, everybody knows over the years, you've heard a million stories of police brutality, this and that, and so forth. I mean, there can be some real, real creepy people hiding behind the badge. But that's a tiny minority. And more often than not, I don't know what happened to Freddie Gray. Nobody should die in police custody. I got Dan on high, 95. He's going to lose him. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Yeah, hello. But two things. In terms of the folks in Baltimore and inner city people, I think the American dream works for people who go to it, who go to school, get married, get an education, raise a family. If you're sitting back, and I don't care what color you are, if you're sitting back waiting that someone owes you something, the government's going to do something for you, look at the Indian reservations if you want to see what the government will do for you.
Really?
That people have to get out of this, somebody owes me something, despite the fact...
I'm with you, man.
I think there's three elements in this country. The Europeans that came over here and conquered the country, of course, the Americans, the Native Americans that they took what they could from them, and the slaves that helped build the country. The African Americans should not be considered themselves a minority. They're part of the fabric. They need to go out and grab it. If you wait for the government to do it for you, it's simply not going to happen. You're going to have expectations that won't be met, and they'll be angry and frustrated.
Good call, Dan. I hope it's a hands-free device you're using. I tell you, we're going to work hard to get some positive ideas going. We're going to continue to bust the chops of people who either want to cause trouble on the streets of Baltimore or trouble in auditoriums in Garland, Texas. I think in some ways they're both anarchists. Pamela Geller would be at home throwing stuff and looting the CVS in Baltimore. I didn't see her there. But, you know, I'm serious. I cannot abide... I cannot abide the, hypocrisy and people that use a kind of a BS line like, this is all of it. This is a symposium on free speech. It's a bunch of nonsense. I'm so glad that Trump saw right through her.
Maybe hiding behind free speech is what
exactly. So it is Cinco de Mayo, which is the big Mexican holiday. Pitbull, by the way, is of Cuban descent. Still all Latinos. Oh, everyone's like St. Patrick's Day. Today, everybody is Mexican. Everybody's Latino. Everybody can have a margarita or a rum and coke. Cuba Libre.